Welcome to Season 17 of the Follow My Lead podcast, where each week I bring you stories and best practices of today's leaders to help you on your leadership journey. My name is John Eads. Here we go! Welcome back. Season 17, moving right along. This week's featured conversation is fantastic. I had Todd Whedon join me on the show. He is the head of branch transformation at SunTrust Bank. And I originally learned about Todd through our free leadership assessment. If you haven't already, you can go to learnloft.com/assessment. I've had about 30,000 people take the assessment. And over time, we look at the very highest scores that we've gotten over the entirety of the assessment, and Todd's scores jumped off the page. So I reached out to Todd, been doing some research for the book, and we've just created this friendship and relationship. So I asked him to come on the show and share some lessons and best practices that he's learned, and he delivered in a huge way. I mean, I can't wait for you to hear this, because when I asked him about the hardest element of leadership, his answer was so good. He said, if you don't have a game plan around accountability, then don't even try. I mean, it was so good. I mean, he just delivered throughout this podcast. I'm jacked that you're going to get to learn from it. So I want you to get out Evernote. I want you to tune in on your drive. I want you to really bear down during this 40-minute podcast and go apply what you learn, because this stuff is awesome. So without further ado, here's my interesting conversation with my friend, Todd Whedon.
Well, Todd, thanks for being on the show.
Absolutely. I'm glad to be here. Thanks for inviting me.
I've been really looking forward to this, and I know our audience is going to love it, because I get asked all the time, John, have more people on your show who have progressed in the same company through the ranks, and they just keep getting results at every single stage that they're in. And that is exactly what you've done at SunTrust. In fact, you've gone from area manager to SVP area manager to premier bank manager to EVP to now a new role, head of branch transformation. For those people that are in the same company that are looking to progress or get promotions, what do you credit your success at SunTrust to?
So I've been asked this question a lot. And you know, there's a few elements. I try to keep things pretty simple. So I think one is, you know, I've always made it a priority to let my work speak for itself. So meaning any job that I've had, you know, for all the right reasons, I've made it a point to have, you know, focus on my team delivering their success, and their success usually brought myself success, which then gave me the right to start asking for other opportunities. And kind of that's the second part, is everyone thinks that this tap on the shoulder mentality is how it works. And at least in my experience, tapping on the shoulder isn't why I've been able to progress in my company. I've usually asked for the opportunities, and I've been the one seeking out the new opportunities. But I've also had that coupled directly with, you know, leadership engagement, meaning my leader, the many that I've had at SunTrust, they've always been right there supporting the efforts. But I've been driving the efforts the entire time. And I think sometimes, you know, there's leaders out there and teammates who and I call employees teammates. I can't call them employees. It's weird to say that word. I call them teammates. They don't realize that it's not just doing the work and doing a great job, but there's also an element that you've got to run with your own development. You've got to own your own development, regardless of what generation you're in. And I've always done that with the right kind of support from leadership. And I think that combination has kind of helped me be able to progress naturally into these different roles.
Well, I want you to go back to one specific role. You go to Atlanta, which is kind of the birthplace of SunTrust. I could be wrong, but it certainly is a major headquarters, and the team in that particular area had been struggling. Walk me through going back into that environment as a new leader in that area of the country and having to transform that team into a success. What did you do?
So that was, and you're right. So SunTrust is actually originally a trust company. They merged with SunBank out of Orlando, but trust company was based in Atlanta. Our headquarters are in Atlanta. So it was a big deal to pick up the Atlanta team. At that point, I was asked to be the division executive. I had about 140 branches in the greater metro Atlanta area. And there was a lot of pressure. It was my first really big kind of executive level job. And it also came with a lot of visibility, given our headquarters are in Atlanta. A lot of high-end clients of ours are in Atlanta. Obviously, most of the executive leadership sits in Atlanta. And, you know, I realized early on that despite all the credit or skills or credibility I walked into that role with, if I didn't understand what was actually happening in Atlanta, then everything I mentioned or tried to lead with would have been for nothing. So the timing was really well. I had about a month in that role before we had a rally with all of the branch managers. It was already set up. It was already scheduled. And I had a month to understand what was going on before I was able to get in front of, you know, 140 branch managers and kind of say, I'm here, here's the vision. So I spent those first 3 or 4 weeks out in the field with my leaders. At that point, I think I had 9 area managers. And I spent time in the field watching, learning, and understanding where they were at in the business. And I used that time to not coach, to not teach, to not preach. I used that time to understand where there was opportunities and where there was gaps and how I was going to be able to really rally this team around going out and delivering. So thankfully after, and it's actually the last leader that I spent time with was when it really clicked for me. And we were talking about the Chicago Bulls or Michael Jordan or something along those lines. And this idea of home court advantage popped in my head. And I recognized early on that the team had kind of lost the magic that they should have walking in every day delivering for our clients. You've got a brand like SunTrust, you've got the city of Atlanta. And, you know, right then it popped in. It was Atlanta home court advantage. So that opportunity for me to get in front of that team at that rally, you know, they were expecting kind of this boring kickoff. And instead the lights dropped, the Chicago Bulls theme came on, and each area manager was announced just like they announced the Chicago Bulls in the 90s to the music. And I was the last one that came out, and I'd written this piece around ability versus authority. And it was this idea that I'd written around, you know, Michael Jordan's a great example where regardless of, you know, the authority he may or may not had, he leveraged his skill set based off of his ability. So no one was like, hey, you know, why don't you make a dunk from the free throw line? He just did it because he had the ability to do that. And I reminded the team that we sit in Atlanta, there's something important behind that. And your ability to go deliver and to be differentiated in this market is way above whatever authority you think you might have. So I need you all to lean into that idea of ability and not get held back or have a ceiling based off of where your authority remains. And that was the initial kind of spark that kind of lit that team to then go and have a really incredible run and do a lot of great things in Atlanta.
What an awesome way to spend time. You know, you're month in and all of a sudden you come in, drop the lights. I can hear Jordan and Scottie Pippen and Tony Kukoc coming out. It's what a creative thing to do. Did you always have that vision for something creative to get people fired up and motivated, or did that come through something you learned from somebody else?
Yeah, I've actually thought about that a lot. I think the problem with me is, if you look at my background, I didn't get a degree in business. I got a degree in almost film is what it would be called at University of Georgia. And, but I have an extremely, motivating and, you know, high expectation wife. We've been together. We met in high school and, have been together for 15 plus years married. And, you know, she's always holding me to extremely high standards. So despite having a film degree, I needed to come out of school and do something that was gonna be beneficial for our life. We just got married. So, you know, I went into the business realm. And when I first got into the banking world, I started leveraging small little bits of creativity just to differentiate. And when I got into the area manager role in Augusta, I realized I had a little bit more, you know, power, if you will, to start influencing in that way. So for me, it started off with really flashy emails. So I was like the first guy that I changed the font to Chiller, and everyone was like, whoa, it's Chiller font. Like they just couldn't control themselves. So then I became a little bit of a font snob. And then even something as simple as, you know, I would make these images that would picture either logos or sayings or messages that blew people's minds, when really it was Google Images plus Microsoft Paint. And that was my only method of motivation. But, you know, I'd get a picture of you know, macho man, right? And I'd have some saying of him saying, go out and help deliver or go make it happen today. And that was, you know, even when I ran, when I first ran Premier Banking, those folks got every single day, they got an email from me with a picture and a motivation to go out and deliver. You know, they, you know, I started building and creating awards. So even when I ran Premier, you know, our first quarter as a team, you know, I picked our top three performers and I built out this PowerPoint presentation with music and text and images to build up who was going to get these awards. And I gave out these little jars of hustle that are based off of an image that I'd seen online. So I built these little jars. So they carried this jar in their hand. And, you know, I saw you drinking Starbucks earlier. It's like they want to hold the jar because they want to have something to hold on to represent what they've done. So that's progressed. And then eventually when I was in Atlanta, I started testing kind of what I call Toddcast, where I do these audio. I started writing pieces and then audio. And then eventually I realized I could flip the switch on video. And then for almost, you know, 2.5 years up until about a month and a half ago, for 2.5 years straight, you know, my team got 2 weekly vlogs from me every single week. Delivered to, you know, 1,000+ teammates to keep them on track, keep them motivated, and keep them understanding what our true purpose was that we needed to deliver.
It's awesome. I mean, it's so out of the box, but it, you know, with today's media, and particularly with so many remote teams now, Todd, you know, obviously, even with branches in the banking world changing, I mean, just having that, that it's more like an invitation, I would say, right? I mean, it's kind of like this idea of being welcomed versus invited. And by you sending them something specific to them about something that you want them to do, it's almost like you're inviting them to go perform better versus just, you're welcome to perform better here. It's like, you're invited to be, it's like going to a wedding, right? It's like, you're invited. You're invited to perform here. And it doesn't surprise me that the results followed. I think when you talk about what you just mentioned, it's really about communication, right?
Yep.
And then at the same time, consistency. Every week, twice a week, you got a video from me. The communication was clear and the consistency was clear. Why are those two things, consistency and communication, so important in leadership?
Well, I think for me, you know, even at a smaller scale or even at a larger scale in my last role, you know, I had just shy of 200 branches. I had over 1,000 teammates and they're geographically dispersed. So if you don't hear from someone, then you start to worry, right? This is going to be a horrible metaphor or example because I'm going to botch it. But, you know, I remember hearing someone talk. I think I was hearing a pastor preach about fear, and their son was like in the dark hallway, and they were, you know, although they were holding onto their dad's hand, they needed to hear their dad's voice. Like they needed to hear it. And that gave them ease. And I think sometimes as a team on a difficult day or a perfectly teed up day, you know, you need to hear your leader's voice and understand, you know, I got you and this is going to work and we're going to win. This is going to happen. You know, imagine a coach not showing up before the beginning of a major football game and they just don't show up. And it's like, well, I guess we got to go out and play. They speak to them and they communicate. So for me, that communication, that was my outlet to get 1,000 people to understand what we were going to go deliver that day. And, you know, I think the consistency part of it builds your credibility. Because, you know, I've seen people motivate and you know, you could be a leader that just motivates and then never follows up or doesn't do it consistently. And you're just kind of flaky. You're just kind of out there soaring around. You might pop in when you need to and say something. The consistency is what starts building discipline. It starts building routine. It starts building habits. So, you know, there was a few times where I was having technical issues and, you know, I get an email from a part-time teller at 9:15 on a Monday and say, where's the vlog? And you know, when you got a part-time teller, it could be a part-time teller manager. It could be one of my directs saying, where is it? It's kind of like they expect it. And now they're holding me accountable for what I started. And, it just showed they were bought in, just from a human emotional core element, they were bought in. And from that, we were able to grow and harvest a lot of really, really good things.
It's awesome. And it's so true. I mean, that consistency just breeds trust too, doesn't it? I mean, the fact that you know it's coming out 2 times a week and you're going to deliver on it and they know that, it's like It's they know you're going to do what you say you're going to do. And and when their leader does that, you know, so many people, unfortunately, have had a parent or have had an organizational leader that's that, you know, do as I say, not as I do. And that model from you is communicating a completely different message to your team by being consistent. And I think it's excellent.
Well, so one thing I'll jump into to pop on that really quick, which is interesting. So a lot of people would ask me, why do you do these videos? And I give them either one or two answers that make them laugh or you know, understand that I'm just a human being. But then I'd say, honestly, one of the biggest drivers that I did it was accountability. That was one of the biggest drivers behind the video, because now I know that you heard the message. And if you didn't hear the message, you opted not to watch the video, which was your own human will deciding, I won't watch this. And then more importantly, for my branch managers, you know, part of their job was to create an environment that can deliver a great experience for the team and for clients. So I already told them, I said, listen, you got 5 days a week, 6 days on Saturdays that you've got to go in and motivate that team and get them inspired. And guess what? I already handled two of those days for you. So if you can't pick up the slack for those other days, then you got to start wondering whether you're in the right role and whether you're a leader of this team or not. And if you don't understand how to motivate them, I just role modeled for you in two different videos every week how you can get these teammates motivated and the message to go deliver to them. Make it your own, leverage what I've shown you. And I would use that, the vlog, as accountability and visits when I'd be with my area manager or my region exec in the branch and they weren't delivering. I'd go right back and say, well, I spoke about this. It was just 3 weeks ago. I did a video. I spent time recording myself to role model how this is supposed to happen. And then you decided to do nothing with it. And I'd just like to know why.
Mm.
You just sit there and wait. And then that shows the power behind
who's
it.
Bought in and who's not. I mean, it's really what it comes down to. Now, you were an early adopter of this in a big company putting out video of yourself. I mean, today, probably more the norm. 3 years ago, not the norm, specifically in a big company with all of the, you know, the red tape that would go with something like that. Did you get any pushback in doing things like this?
Yeah, so I've always kind of been that edgy leader guy, and I've always had really great leaders who I've got opportunity to work for. And, you know, part of this was a buildup. I had to prove it was kind of like a slow burn around, okay, Todd's edgy and you could tell as I went through like the photos for the photos to a blog to audio to video, I had to slowly kind of work my way up, and it naturally followed through like my natural leadership progression and maturity. So, it was a pretty open idea, and there were elements that I made sure were right size, and if I needed to clear things. But you know, the reality also is we're in an interesting industry that is somewhat scrutinized in certain elements. So you know, as 2017 started, there started to be some different elements around the videos that I needed to ensure I was clearing through certain sources, mm-hmm. just because it was such an influential population that I needed to make sure that I was covered in every element. So that way we could minimize risk. So, you know, I think with everything, and this is just an example, but with everything, if you're in a leadership role, I mean, there are elements where you've got to take risks. And they've got to be calculated risks. Right. But what I also know is, and I've learned this, I call it like the shrapnel effect, is I'm going to do certain things that are push the edge. But if I'm coming from the right foundation, ethically, morally, then there's a good chance that despite the edge and the shrapnel that'll fly everywhere, the majority of people will actually be better off because of it. And there will always be a handful that either didn't like it, they didn't appreciate it, or they're not down with it. But I'll never make my leadership decisions based off of those 5%. I will base it off the 95% whose lives will be better by me leveraging and showing that edge. So I will continue to do so.
Yeah. Brilliant. Shrapnel effect. Love it. I want you to touch on one more thing before we move on to the next kind of big bucket that I want to get to. And that is a lot of the leaders struggle with priorities. You know, they know they need to get results or hit numbers or, you know, get to some goal that's maybe set by someone else at the beginning of the year. I want you to talk through why priorities are so important. I think back to a story of when you set three big priorities for a team, and you mentioned standing up in front of and letting them go achieve those priorities. Why are priorities so important, and what did you do with that, with those three priorities, and what did you do for the team?
Yeah, so I think there's two elements to this. I think there's your priorities as a leader, which help then help you figure out and understand the priorities in other spaces. And I was fortunate enough when I first started with SunTrust, I worked for a gentleman who kind of broke down where his priorities were, and I've let those stick with me. So when I think of myself as a leader, you know, I've got three priorities, and it's faith, it's family, and then it's work. And the reason why it's in that order doesn't mean work's not going to get anything. It means that if I'm not grounded spiritually and I'm not in a great place from a family perspective with my children and my wife, then my work is half of what it could be or half of what it should be. So if those are in lockstep, I'm now fully charged to go deliver as the leader I need to be in regards to whatever role I might have. So that grounding then gives me a totally different perspective as I walk in and help prioritize for the team. The other piece specific to team priorities and setting those, it's very difficult to simplify things. And I've realized that. I also think, and maybe it's because I'm not heavily intelligent, but I think I'm really, really good. I think I'm really good. I say that to make myself say, no, you are. It's like, thank you. No. Leaders need validation. They never get it. But you know, when I try to simplify things at the most core element as I possibly can, because then it allows the team to truly deliver the way they need to. It's the reason why if I see a blog that says like the 34 ways to be most productive, I'm like, never going to read that. If you tell me the two ways to be the most productive, I'm going to read that, because then I can actually get it done. So, you know, a perfect example is when I first got to Atlanta, you know, we're in branch banking. It's very fast paced. There's all these different priorities going on at all times. So I needed to sit there and say, if I could come up with three things that the team needed to do consistently, branch managers specifically, because they're going to then create this ripple effect everywhere else. And then I could tell my leaders what to go focus on for their branch managers executing. If I could think of three priorities that if the majority of everyone did these every day, that would encompass 95%+ of what needed to get done. Meaning, if we have to drop the ball into 5% here, someone's going to offset it here. This is where we land. And that's what I had to do. That then came with more, that came with a lot of observation, and it came with a lot of kind of thought process around, okay, this can be put underneath here. These two things seem like they were top priority, but if we're doing this here, we then automatically do those things. So let's clear it up for the team. And I called it the line in the sand. And that's what I did is after I'd been in Atlanta for, you know, home court advantage, everyone's excited, you know, that starts to wear off a little bit. You know, 3 months later, we pulled them together in four different settings because we had too many people to bring it together again. And it was called line in the sand sessions, where I basically went over these three priorities. We role modeled how they were each going to work. So everyone understood what success looked like in these. And then I said, and this is when I draw the line in the sand. And if you're part of this team, you got to be on this side of the line. This side of the line executes these strategies. This other side of the line tells me you're not bought in and you're unwilling to execute these. And then that's where I had to basically say, I'm simplifying your role to empower your leadership. And with that comes risk. So I'm willing to risk myself as a leader by standing in front of whatever other hot priorities are coming towards us. And I will take those and they can keep firing at me as long as they need to, because I know if we do these three things and you all commit to this, then these other ones will go away and we'll come out stronger and higher performers. And for the most part, you know, that's what they were able to do, but it took a risk of me saying, I'm going to shelf these other things because in the end, they will all come to fruition if we just do these three things.
It's awesome. The line in the sand idea. So many people are just so reliant on their email, right? And putting out fires, and leaders just thinking about what can I put out? What can I put out? Or what can I do to solve something? In reality, like setting those three priorities for the team, standing up in front of them and saying, go execute on these. Anything else that comes at you, I'll take. You know, it's almost a completely different way to think. The next big area I want to cover with you, which I think a lot of leaders struggle, Todd, is when someone is underperforming, when someone is unwilling, whether that be will or skill, unwilling or unable to execute those three priorities and get the job done and perform at levels that's going to help the team get where it's trying to go. How did you handle those situations? Because I feel like a lot of leaders really kind of crumble under that decision.
Yeah, so it's a lot of times people ask me, like, what's the hardest thing? What's the hardest element of leadership? And I told them, like, point blank, if you don't have a game plan around accountability, then don't even try. Don't even try. And, you know, accountability in my mind, and when I first say that, even if someone's listening to this, they're like, oh, accountability, like, bad word. It's like, no, accountability could be awesome. Accountability could be, hey, I asked you to do this. I come back a week later, you did it. And then accountability is actually recognition and praise. It can mean the exact same thing. The problem is, as leaders, sometimes we avoid the awkward accountability, which is just terribly damaging to all parties involved, because that means you're then letting someone who may not be in the right job stay in that job longer, which hurts the business, hurts them emotionally probably. They probably are more stressed when they go home. It might affect their families. You know, it also means that they might need coaching and you're not having the awkward conversation to then drive into another level of coaching. So then it goes right back into the, you know, poor performance for the company, financials, their family, stress, life, all those things. And I just simplified it. And I said, listen, this is the simplest way to approach accountability, folks. And then went back to the communication thing earlier. It is clarity in message and asks, right? So clear asks up front. That's the first part. And then when you hit the plus sign, you then plus that with disciplined follow-up, right? Following up on what you asked. If you just do that, if you physically just do that, you will run into accountability like it's a wall. There's no way to avoid it. And then when you hit it, you either say they delivered and there's high fives and there's success and there's praise, or they didn't and you ask why. So for poor performers, that's all it comes down to. It's less, let's agree on an ask that is feasible, right? So it's a feasible ask. And let's make sure that you have got the role modeling of how to go achieve this ask. And I'm going to give you a week or 2 weeks to go execute. And when I come back, this is what I'm going to look for. And I'll be back in 2 weeks. Then you come back in 2 weeks and you go right to it and say, did we do this? And right then and there, we'll tell you how bought in they are to, you know, their ability and their will to go deliver here or not. And then you simply have the conversation.
Is it focused, Todd, on the result that you're after for them? Or were you focused more on the process or the behaviors that you want to see that you knew based on your experience to produce those results?
It's both, right? Okay. And I know it's like, oh, I kind of want to one answer, Todd, not both, but it is both. Because in my experience personally as a leader, the things or the activities or behaviors, the stuff that kind of consists to be like breathing, right? Those were built in for a reason. Then there were results attached to those. If I come back and they haven't even done the stuff that takes breathing, and usually the plans are built off of that, because I can come back and be like, you are not bought in. Like, let's go straight to the end and understand whether we're here for the right reasons or not. But if I come in and I see that they're trying, and they're delivering the activities and behaviors, but the results aren't there, then I dig in. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, okay, we're in a good place right now. But I didn't hit the results. Yeah, I kind of don't care right now. I care that you're bought in enough to try and you're willing to take a risk and put yourself out there. So let's figure out why you did these things, but they didn't actually translate the way you wanted to. Because first off, as a leader, maybe I built a bad plan for you. And maybe the results I put out here weren't the right results because mm-hmm. you're trying. That gives you an opportunity to jump in and coach and really understand whether they've got the skill to deliver. They've already shown you got the will. Now it's like, let's talk skill. And now we can spend a little bit of time there. And if we still get to the end point where this isn't the right fit for them or they need to think of something else, then we did it in a really authentic way that didn't demoralize the person and just helped them through that journey a little bit. But if I come back that first time and I've built it off of basic blocking and tackling, breathing activities, and they just opted out, then that's a really, really fast conversation.
Mm-hmm. Got it. You've also, we'll kind of close on some fun stuff, but I did want to get to one other thing. You got this idea of hustle being really important, and I think most people would say, you know, Gary Vee and hustle and We got to hustle. How do you think about hustle? Because certainly, you know, you're a motivated, type A, driven person. Does everybody have to be that way to hustle? Or how do you think about hustle? Because it has been a real key to your success.
Yeah, it's interesting. And I, you know, I've watched a lot of Gary Vaynerchuk stuff. Probably more a couple years ago, right when he started Daily V's, when I started really kind of getting involved. I know he's fine with it. I don't like the fact he's like always cussing and swearing. That bothers me a little bit. So it kind of keeps me from watching. But when I first ran into the world hustle, I didn't know who Gary Vaynerchuk was at all. Interestingly enough, there's a gentleman named Stephen Brewster. At that point, he was a creative arts pastor for a church called Crosspoint in Nashville. And he had written an article that was called Control What You Can Control. And it was all about hustle. And when I read that article, I was an area manager in Augusta, and it just totally changed my perspective on the day to day of what I was doing, because it now took a word and it kind of was a brand around how do you do your work? And it became that mantra of control what you can control. So I use that as, and it hasn't gone away. I use that as the motivating driver behind the way in which I choose to work and operate is different, because I put all my efforts on what I can control. So I don't spend a lot of time in noise. I don't spend a lot of time swirling. I try to keep my team from doing the same. We focus on what we can control, because then we can take ownership of that and actually go out and deliver. So it's morphed into, it stayed with me. It's still even behind me right now. It stayed with me, honestly, for the past almost 8 years. It's like the resounding word. If you think of Todd here, the first thing you're going to think of is hustle. But it's also like, it also makes it fun, and it makes it a little bit competitive, because it gets this idea of, for me, it's just when I'm here and I'm delivering for a team, I am all in, and I'm going to go all in for you. And I need you to do the same, which means if you're interacting with clients, I want you to hustle. I want you to move a little bit faster. I want you to have this work ethic that people can't touch, and that it's all your own work ethic, because you own it, because you control how you do your work. And it's something I try to role model, and I try to get out of my team as well. And it kind of keeps things exciting, and it keeps things hyped up. You know, hustle to me isn't working 80 hours a week, right? Hustle to me is also working so effectively and efficiently during the day that when I get home, I go hustle at home, right? So I don't mind. I got 4 kids. I've got 2, 4, 6, and 9. I've got a wife that I adore and that I want to be totally engaged with. So the moment I clock out here, I'm now in what I call second shift hustle, which is now I got to go deliver and bring my A game to this other part of my world, which is a priority. And it's just kind of like this daily mantra that I try. Now, it makes me sleep like a baby, but it's a daily mantra that I try and bring and deliver, because the team needs it. And if I'm a leader and I can't show them what that looks like, then, you know, my ask to have them go out and deliver loses credibility.
It's awesome. I think the whole idea of a second shift hustle, and which is what we'll close on. I know you put a lot of time, energy, and effort into how you lead at home, just like you do how you lead at work. You talked about your 3 priorities earlier. What's harder, leading at home or leading at work?
Oh, home by far. By far. It is. Because like at work, everything's kind of clear cut, and you kind of know what you're getting. You're still dealing with personalities and human beings, but there's so much at stake at home that it becomes more difficult, because you know there's different distractions, and there's busyness, and there's all those things, and then there's emotions, and then just when you have 4 kids, like it's just totally insane. Mm-hmm. So working through that, it is difficult, because you know you're also kind of always on at home versus here at work. If you're in kind of larger leadership roles, right, you've got that drive. When you go from one place to the other, you've got that drive where you can kind of like lose it a little bit and no one kind of sees that. But at home, sometimes if you're frustrated, like you're right there and, you know, telling my 4-year-old, like, don't scream at your sister. And then she sees dad, or he sees dad screaming at one point, 'cause I get frustrated. It's like, I immediately lost credibility. And I just think there's so much at stake, 'cause there's so many hearts involved at home, mm-hmm. that it's a continuous battle and challenge, but it's a good battle. And it's a good challenge, and there's reasons behind it, but it is like I could be have a super successful day at work and then go home and feel like I just totally dropped the ball. But you know, that's also what it's like. It's a day in, day out grind.
Well, where can people find out more about you and the great work that SunTrust is doing? Where's the best place?
The best place for me is probably LinkedIn. I mean, that's just, you know, because my day job is, you know, kind of an executive type role at SunTrust. I keep things pretty cool, but I do drop content from time to time on LinkedIn. So that's probably the easiest place to find.
We need more of that, Todd. We need more.
I know. Yeah, I know. I'm trying to decipher through this new role. But there's, you know, I might have some stuff in the works that I could start dropping on a regular basis. So I'll try and get the goodies out to the team and everyone more often than I have lately.
I like it. Well, we really appreciate you taking time to come on the show and sharing such great insight.
You got it. Thanks so much, John.
Thanks for joining us in another week of the show. If you like this, do me a favor and share it with a colleague or a friend, or leave a comment, review, and recommendation wherever you listen to podcasts. Anything that would help us spread the message of leadership, it would mean a great deal to me in my heart.